a los organizadores de los fondos que necesitan para continuar su ocupación de la capital del país.
Freeland, que también es ministra de Finanzas, dijo que la Real Policía Montada de Canadá y otras fuerzas del orden han estado recopilando información sobre los manifestantes de la caravana y sus partidarios y compartiendo esa información con las instituciones financieras para restringir el acceso al dinero, sea en efectivo y también a la criptomoneda.
La ley también permite que los bancos apunten al cierre de cuentas a los donantes de las compañías de recaudación de fondos GoFundMe y Give Send Go, que alimentaron esta protesta. La ministra Freeland dijo que no entraría en los detalles de las cuentas de quienes están siendo congeladas.
Con esta medida financiera, el gobierno esperaba obligar a los manifestantes con problemas de liquidez a abandonar la ciudad, ya que no podrían pagar la factura de los hoteles y del combustible, ni muchos otros gastos en los que han incurrido durante estas semanas de ocupación.
La viceprimera ministra en conferencia de prensa el viernes reiteró la necesidad de invocar la ley de emergencias, no solo para despejar Ottawa, sino los pasos fronterizos también, y recordó que en Alberta la policía requisó una considerable cantidad de armas en poder de los manifestantes.
Al momento del cierre de nuestra edición, el operativo de despeje de Ottawa se hacía con el apoyo conjunto de la Policía de Ottawa, la Real Policía Montada de Canadá, policías locales de Peel y otros municipios de Ontario y la colaboración de la Sûreté du Québec.
Mientras tanto, en nuestra provincia, sorpresivos resultados han indicado encuestas con vistas a las elecciones provinciales que deben tener lugar en octubre.
El líder del Partido Conservador de Quebec, Éric Duhem, está disfrutando de los resultados de las encuestas de esta semana que muestran que su partido sigue ganando terreno y lo sitúan como el segundo líder más popular de Quebec.
Duhem fue elegido líder del partido el pasado mes de abril. El partido, casi muerto hace poco, contaría ahora con 52.000 miembros, más que cualquier otro partido provincial de Quebec.
El Partido Conservador de Quebec celebró una convención el pasado otoño y adoptó una plataforma centrada sobre todo en el conservadurismo fiscal tradicional, es decir, de llegar a gobernar, lo harían con un programa de austeridad y recortes a programas sociales.
Duhem es partidario de una mayor intervención privada en la salud y quiere reabrir la exploración de petróleo y gas natural en Quebec. En general, está a favor de lo que llama menos gobierno.
Lo curioso es que con un programa a la derecha de la CAQ y de los liberales, el Partido Conservador Provincial aparezca súbitamente con tal apoyo, ya que en términos porcentuales se ubicaría en tercer lugar detrás de la CAQ y el Partido Liberal, pero superando a Québec Solidaire y al Parti québécois.
Duhem también ha dado su total apoyo a los camioneros cuando han manifestado en la ciudad de Quebec.
Y muy bien, vamos ahora a un nuevo tema musical.
Mi pobre patria, aplastada por abusos del poder. De gente infame que no conoce el pudor. Se creen los dueños todopoderosos y piensan que les pertenece todo. Los gobernantes, cuántos perfectos inútiles bufones en esta tierra que el dolor ha devastado. ¿Acaso no sentís nada de pena ante esos cuerpos tendidos sin vida? No cambiará. no cambiará. Quizá cambiará, y cómo excusarlos, las hienas de la prensa y las de los estadios, chapoteando en el fango como cerdos. Yo me avergüenzo un poco y me hace daño ver a los hombres como animales. No cambiará, no cambiará. Más normales, que pueda contemplar con calma el cielo, que no se hable más de dictaduras. Quizá tendremos que ir tirando mientras la primavera tarda aún en llegar.
La revista de la semana. ¿Cómo se le echa carbón al diferendo ruso-ucraniano? Este pasado miércoles se había anunciado como el día en que tropas rusas invadirían Ucrania. Ello, como se sabe, no ocurrió. No obstante, como la situación permanece muy volátil, la posibilidad de un conflicto militar real no se puede descartar. Aunque incluso si este se desencadena, es de todos modos muy válido preguntarse cómo se ha llegado a este estado de cosas. La desintegración de la Unión Soviética en 1991 dejó un vacío de poder en la región oriental de Europa y en parte en Asia Central, que naturalmente las potencias occidentales, fundamentalmente Estados Unidos, estuvieron ansiosos por llenar. En esto se ha parecido mucho a la situación creada al término de la Primera Guerra Mundial, cuando a la derrota del Imperio Alemán, del Austrohúngaro y del Turco Otomano, los países victoriosos, especialmente Gran Bretaña y Francia, se lanzaron como aves carroñosas a apoderarse de los despojos territoriales dejados por las potencias vencidas. Hasta 1991, Rusia, la principal república de la entonces URSS, había encarnado, para bien o para mal, no solo un Estado y una nación, sino además un proyecto político, la construcción del socialismo, la primera vez que se hacía eso, que desde sus inicios había provocado una contradicción con la mayor parte del resto del mundo, que la veía como una amenaza al orden capitalista imperante. El fin de la URSS y la adopción por parte de Rusia, así como de las otras ex-repúblicas soviéticas, de un modelo económico basado en el mercado, un modelo capitalista, hizo pensar a algunos que ya no habría motivos para nuevos conflictos, por lo menos no entre Estados Unidos y Rusia, ya que ahora ambos estarían cultivando economías de mercado. Pero por cierto que no ha sido así, porque factores tanto económicos como políticos han seguido creando nuevas contradicciones. Rusia, la potencia derrotada al término de la Guerra Fría, La verdad es que nunca estuvo vencida del todo. Nadie lo está si todavía tiene un arsenal nuclear capaz de destruir al planeta varias veces y cuenta además con un masivo contingente militar. Estados Unidos, por su parte, tampoco estaba exento de serios problemas sociales y económicos. A eso hubo de sumarse la irrupción cada vez más fuerte de China como nuevo actor, no solo en el plano militar, que ya lo era, sino como una potencia económica que hoy le disputa la supremacía al propio Estados Unidos. Bajo la conducción de Vladimir Putin, un hombre formado en los servicios de inteligencia de la ex URSS, Rusia, de manera pausada pero firme, ha venido reafirmando sus aspiraciones de ser una vez más considerada como una potencia de gravitación mundial. Por cierto, en Washington también se han dado cuenta de ello, y ahora tratan de mantener las ventajas que lograron cuando se derrumbó la URSS. En particular, porque cuando la OTAN se expandió en Europa del Este, incorporando a ex aliados soviéticos e incluso a ex repúblicas soviéticas, prácticamente quedaron a las puertas de Rusia. El total cerco de Rusia por parte de la OTAN, al menos en su parte europea, donde se centra su corazón político e industrial, podría lograrse si Ucrania y Georgia, las dos ex repúblicas soviéticas, fueran admitidas por la OTAN. Esas dos ex repúblicas aún no hacen parte de esta alianza. Moscú exige que ello no ocurra, más aún que haya garantías de que ello no va a ocurrir. A todas luces es una demanda razonable de parte de un país que en el siglo XX sufrió tres invasiones importantes: en la Primera Guerra Mundial por parte de fuerzas alemanas, luego una vez triunfante la Revolución por la intervención de potencias occidentales en varios frentes, y finalmente en 1941 cuando fue atacada por la Alemania nazi. Por cierto, Putin puede no ser un modelo de gobernante democrático. Sus arranques autoritarios, particularmente en el trato a sus opositores, son bien conocidos. Pero, por su parte, las motivaciones de la OTAN y Estados Unidos no pueden ser consideradas las más plausibles tampoco. Ucrania, en este sentido, está siendo usada como un simple peón por ambos lados. Uno bien debe preguntarse, ¿por qué toda esta historia de guerra creada en torno a Ucrania? ¿Por qué ahora? Ya que si hubo una acción dura, esta fue la anexión de la península de Crimea en 2014, que valió algunas protestas diplomáticas de Occidente, pero nada más. Ahora ha habido un despliegue de tropas en la frontera ucraniana que los rusos dicen que son maniobras regulares. Eso ha puesto a todos nerviosos en Occidente, aunque también todo puede ser una maniobra mediática. ¿Puede acaso que lo que ocurre en verdad es simplemente el uso de un viejo recurso para recuperar a la alicalía economía en Occidente? Veamos, una de las formas más simples de hacerlo ha sido históricamente mediante la guerra. El poderoso complejo industrial militar en Estados Unidos y en prácticamente todo el mundo desarrollado es muy importante, y su accionar también impacta numerosas otras ramas de la economía. Claro, uno podría no querer pensar mal del presidente Joe Biden, al que hasta hace pocos meses muchos veían con alivio y esperanza comparado con quien era la alternativa. Ni quizás tampoco se puede pensar igual mal de los líderes europeos, pero en política no hay mucho espacio para consideraciones emocionales. El movimiento de armamento y la consiguiente demanda de pertrechos, sin contar los medios de transporte, los productores de combustible y, por cierto, la importante industria informática, han estado ganando mucho dinero ya con solo rumores de conflicto armado. Lo malo es que en el medio de todo esto, el pueblo ucraniano parece quedar en una patética posición a merced de las grandes potencias. Pero así nomás es. Y no parece probable que el presidente ucraniano se plante firme y diga que no quiere interferencias y que su país puede arreglar las cosas con su vecino de un modo dialogante. Eso no le convendría a la OTAN ni a los negociantes de las armas, que prefieren mantener un clima de tensión. the weekly review. How do you add more fuel into the Russian-Ukrainian dispute? This past Wednesday has been announced that the day when Russian troops would have invaded Ukraine. This, as it known, did not happen. However, as the situation remains very volatile, the possibility of a real military conflict cannot be ruled out. Although even if it does break out, it is still very valid to ask how it has come to this state of affairs. The disintegration of the Soviet Union in 1991 left a power vacuum in Eastern Europe and in part in Central Asia, which the Western powers, primarily the United States, were anxious to fill. And this, it was a very similar to situation to the situation created at the end of World War I, when after the defeat of the German Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the Ottoman Empire, the victorious countries, especially Great Britain and France, swept down like carrion birds to seize the territorial spoils left by the defeated powers. Until 1991, Russia, the main republic of the then USSR, had embodied, for better or for worse, not only a state and a nation, but also a political project, the construction of socialism, which from its beginnings had created a contradiction with most of the rest of the world that saw it as a threat to the prevailing capitalist order. The end of the USSR and the adoption by Russia and the other former Soviet republics of a market-based economy and a capitalist model led some to believe that there would no longer be any reason for new conflicts, at least not between the United States and Russia, since both will now be cultivating market economies. But this has certainly not been the case, because both economic and political factors have continued to create new contradictions. Russia, the defeated power at the end of the Cold War, was never really defeated. Nobody is, if it still has a nuclear arsenal capable of destroying the planet several times over. And it also has a massive military contingent. The United States, for its part, was not exempt from serious social and economic problems either. To this must be added the increasingly strong eruption of China as a new actor, not only in the military field, which it already was, but also as an economic power that today disputes the supremacy of the United States itself. Under the leadership of Vladimir Putin, a man trained in the intelligence services of the former USSR, Russia has been slowly but surely reaffirming its aspiration to be once again considered a world power. Certainly, Washington has also realized this and is now trying to maintain the advantage it gained when the USSR collapsed, particularly because when NATO expanded into Eastern Europe, incorporated former Soviet allies and even former Soviet republics, it was practically on Russia's doorstep. The total encirclement of Russia by NATO, at least in its European part, where its political and industrial heartland is centered, could be achieved if Ukraine and Georgia, two former Soviet republics, were admitted to NATO. Moscow demands that this should not happen. Indeed, that there should be guarantees that it will not happen. This is clearly a reasonable demand from a country that in the 20th century suffered three major invasions, in World War I by German forces, then after the triumph of the revolution by the intervention of Western powers on several fronts, and finally in 1941 when it was attacked by Nazi Germany. Certainly, Putin might not be a model of a democratic ruler. His authoritarian outbursts, particularly in the treatment of his opponents, are well known. But for their part, the motivations of NATO and the United States cannot be considered the most plausible either. Ukraine, in this sense, is being used as a mere pawn by both sides. One must well ask why all this war hysteria created around Ukraine.
Why now? For if there was a tough action, this was the annexation of the Crimean Peninsula in 2014, which elicited some diplomatic protest from the West, but nothing more. Now there has been a troop deployment on the Ukrainian border, which the Russians say are regular maneuvers. That has made everyone nervous in the West, although it may also all be a media stunt. Could it be that what is really happening is simply the use of an old device to recover the flagging economy of the West? Let's see. One of the simplest ways of doing this has historically been through war. The powerful military-industrial complex in the United States, and in virtually the entire developed world, is very important, and its action impacts numerous other branches of the economy as well. Of course, some people still don't want to distrust President Joe Biden, whom, until a few months ago, was viewed with relief and hoped, if one compared to the alternative. But in politics, there is not much room for emotional considerations. The movement of armaments and the consequent demand for supplies, not to mention means of transportation, fuel producers, and indeed the important computer technology industry, have been making a lot of money already on rumors of armed conflict alone. The bad thing is that in the midst of all this, the Ukrainian people seem to be left in a pathetic position at the mercy of the great powers. But this seems to be the way things are, and it does not seem likely that the Ukrainian president will stand up and say that he does not want interference and that his country can settle things with its neighbor in a diplomatic way. That will not suit NATO and the military industry and arms dealers, who prefer to maintain a climate of tension. Good day.
Y ahora vamos al fichero latino de hoy, 20 de febrero. Entre los anuncios de interés público tenemos el consulado de la República Argentina en Montreal, junto con el Cinema Public y en alianza con la Universidad de Concordia, ha organizado una retrospectiva sobre la talentosa cineasta argentina Lucrecia Martel. El evento se inició el 17 de febrero y continuará hasta el 11 de marzo. Para mayor información hay que contactar el consulado argentino en el teléfono 514-842-6582.
Y la dosis de refuerzo de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la tercera dosis a las personas que tengan 18 años y más. Y a partir de mañana lunes también a las personas a mayores de 12 años también va a estar disponible esta tercera dosis. Las dos primeras dosis ya están también disponibles para los niños entre 5 y 12 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé en francés e inglés.
En lo que respecta a publicaciones, l'édition française du livre de Saint-Gilien dans la Belle Provence est maintenant disponible à la librairie de l'Université de Montréal, c'est-à-dire dans les 3200 Chambriand, à la librairie Bertrand, 430 Saint-Pierre, Vieux-Montréal, et en ligne sur le site de Renoblet. Le prix du livre, c'est de 10 dollars. Plus tax.
The book Chilean Presence in La Belle Provence, English version of the book Presencia Chilena en La Belle Provence, written by Sergio Martinez and Roberto Hervas, is already on sale at Argos Bookstore, located at 1841A, St. Catherine West, and Paragraph Bookstore on 2220 McGill College Avenue. Price $10 plus tax.
Edición inglesa del libro Presencia Chilena en La Belle Provence, Chilean Presence in La Belle Provence, escrito por Sergio Martínez y Roberto Hervás, ya está a la venta en la librería Argos en el 1841A de la calle Saint Catherine Oeste y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 2220 de McGill College Avenue. El precio es de $10 más impuestos.
El tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá. Combinación de sol y nubosidad con posibilidades de nieve ligera y una temperatura máxima de menos 3 grados. Para esta noche, un 40% de posibilidades de nieve ligera con una temperatura mínima de menos 16 grados.
Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tienen alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, solo tienen que comunicarse con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica. Esto es laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Y Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del Internet. Entre el sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
Y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
I'm Thomas Witherspoon of Asheville, North Carolina, and you're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Hi, everyone. everyone. Welcome to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Sunday, February the 20th. We thank you for joining us. Our email address is radioreport@yahoo.com. Our show is archived and streaming live on ckut.ca, the website of CKUT Radio in Montreal. Our Facebook page, International Radio Report, has a bunch of new members this week. We want to welcome Roberto, Pedro, Peter, Jeff, and Mathabo, bringing us to 717 members. You can find us on Facebook. Simply search for International Radio Report. And our YouTube channel is becoming more and more popular. It seems that a lot of people like to listen to it at their convenience. So just go to YouTube and look for International Radio Report. We have 578 subscribers there. And our show is posted up there every week, usually within an hour after it airs on CKUT. So we thank you for tuning in. We have a lot of information to pass along to you. I didn't introduce ourselves. My name's Sheldon, and we have Jill with us as usual, taking care of the controls over in Mission Control for the radio show. We are doing this show virtually. We have not been in CKUT studios for, close to 2 years now, I guess we're getting there.
2 years next month.
2 years next month. So yeah, it's gone by quickly. But this technology allows us to bring the show to you every week. So we hope you appreciate that and enjoy it. We will get started with the International Radio Report today with news of the Winter SWL Festival. We've been talking about it for weeks. Not much more to say, except it is coming up quickly, March the 4th and the 5th. SWLFest.com is the website. Full schedule of events is there. You do need to register, though, if you want to participate. It's only $10 to participate for the whole two-day weekend, and you can get all of that information on the website. Please go and register if you're into radio. You will want to be there. You won't want to miss all the activities going on. SWLFest.com, once again, is the website. And we will be doing a special International Radio Report show from Winterfest. So you'll be able to hear that. And if you're registered, be able to participate in it as well via the hospitality suite at Winterfest. This is a bit of a follow-up. We had talked way back when a show had been dropped from CBC National Radio. Randy Bachman, rock star with the Guess Who originally and with Bachman Turner Overdrive, had a longtime running radio show called Vinyl Tap. It was dropped from CBC Radio, and he's sort of been shopping it around, wanting to continue the show. And via the Toronto Star and Canadian Radio News, we find that Randy Bachman says his rock and roll radio show hasn't tapped out after all. Less than a year after Vinyl Tap was canceled by CBC Radio, the 78-year-old Winnipeg musician tells the Canadian Press that he will relaunch the series March 6th on commercial radio airwaves. A new syndicated version has been picked up by Chorus Entertainment to broadcast on nearly a dozen of its rock radio stations across the country. Episodes will air Sundays in most markets, which include Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Hamilton, and others. It's a win for Bachman, who last year described being shocked by CBC's decision to axe his series, citing lower ratings. The show had been on since 2005. The final episode aired on Canada Day of 2021. So I used to listen to that regularly, and I think it'll be nice to have it on commercial radio. They don't mention Montreal at all in here. I'm not sure if a Chorus station in Montreal will be picking that up. I doubt it, because Chorus in Montreal is a pop music station. So anyways, you may have to get it online or some other way. So we'll keep an eye on that. If we have any news about it popping up somewhere in Montreal, we'll let you know.
And, you know, it's nice to see that at least it will continue. So there's a interesting BBC NewsHour report about some mysterious radio signals on shortwave, including reports of jamming of the famous buzzer or UVB-76 signal from Russia. So let's listen to that now.
As troop deployments on the Ukrainian border threaten to spill over into conflict, a battle has already begun on the airwaves of an old Russian spy station dating back to the Cold War. It involves the strange world of number stations, mysterious radio broadcasts that have been airing for decades, and what looks like a recent attempt by someone to cause mischief for the Russians. Our security correspondent Gordon Carrera has been investigating.
Delta, Foxtrot, Delta.
Welcome to the mysterious world of number stations, radio for spies.
Watson, Watson, three.
They can broadcast anything from random numbers
2110
to unnerving voices,
5, 2, 5.
Odd music, even strange beeps and buzzes. Armed with a shortwave radio, anyone can listen in, but you can only understand what it means if you have the right codebooks or technology to decode the message hidden inside.
For shortwave listeners, it's kind of romantic.
Frans Verdijn is one of the people fascinated by this world. He's been tuning into these stations for 40 years, since he was a schoolboy in the Netherlands.
What is the fascination, do you think, for you in these number stations?
Well, that you never know who is broadcasting it and who is sending it and for what. I guess that they are spy stations, and, well, almost certainly they are, but you never know for sure.
But recently, one station he's been tuning into for decades suddenly changed. This is what UVB 76 normally sounds like. It has broadcast from Russia since at least the 1980s. 25 tones a minute, 24 hours a day. Its exact role is mysterious, perhaps linked to the military rather than spies. But whatever it was, it was recently taken over. Yes, that's Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. The Russians are being Rickrolled. That's the common online prank where the song is played as a joke. Not so common on military radio, though.
The frequency is taken over by pirate stations. The transmitter itself is not broken in. They're just pirate stations transmitting on the same frequency. They're sending music. Well, that's never shown before.
Is it possible to have any idea who's behind this?
Well, I guess it has to do with the situation at the Ukrainian border, but also it could be just for fun.
This is where the engineers get busy. Yeah.
This is autonomy, so they're pleased.
To find out more, I headed to City University in London. Inside the Finkelstein Laboratory, Professor David Stupples, a signals intelligence veteran, had a look at the frequency with me on a special screen.
It's an interference signal with somebody being humorous.
So what's that tune we can hear in the background?
The tune is the Lincolnshire Poacher from the Western number station.
So someone's overlaying on a Russian frequency an old Western intelligence number station?
Well, certainly the tune of it, yes.
So it's someone, you think it's someone again kind of pranking or causing trouble or trying to be a bit mischievous?
Mischief or pranking, yeah.
Have you seen this kind of thing before?
No, I haven't.
When you monitor the radio signal through a computer, you also get something that looks like an electronic waterfall displaying the spectral frequency. Here another joke was revealed. A masked face, often used by hackers, appears on the screen as if by magic. It's soon joined by messages and logos in Cyrillic text.
If the Russians wanted this station back to do something with it, as it was probably designed to do, then this would be a very serious nuisance signal.
It seems amazing you're still using this kind of radio, though. It feels like a very old-fashioned technology to use precisely in event of some kind of conflict that might knock out other communications.
You still need it. Otherwise, if all your communications is gone, you have to fall back to the simple.
We don't know who is hacking the Russians, or if this musical interference would really cause any trouble if the stations were called into action in the event of conflict. But for the number station aficionados like France, the prank is more than welcome.
I like it a lot. I look at it every night for a moment if there's something.
And it what puts a smile on your face to see someone playing with the Russians.
Certainly.
That was our security correspondent Gordon Carrera reporting.
So indeed, a very interesting little report, including some lots of mysterious signals in there, some from the past and the jamming going on, including that Rick Astley song over the buzzer, which is kind of funny. And you should monitor 4625. I'm wondering if they haven't upped the power, because it's been received here in Montreal almost every night. So one cool story coming up about radio remains most popular medium across Africa. And this is by the BBC Monitoring Service via Mike Cooper to Glenn Hauser's World of Radio. Radio is the main medium of accessing information in Africa, catering to roughly 800 million people on a continent grappling with limited ICT infrastructure and access to the internet, according to the Secretary General of the African Telecommunications Union. John Omo wrote on the website of the state-run Kenya Broadcasting Corporation that radio has predominantly emerged as a trusted and influential source of information in Africa. As the world celebrated the 2022 World Radio Day under the theme Radio and Trust, stakeholders should challenge themselves on how they can use this powerful medium to influence Africa's digital transformation, he said. In Kenya, although radio has to some extent been eclipsed by television, the sector continues to flourish. According to the Communications Authority, there were 173 licensed radio stations in the country at the end of 2018. In neighboring Somalia, radio is the most important information medium, its popularity reinforced by the country's oral culture, common language, and low literacy levels. Meanwhile, radio listenership in South Africa is consistently higher than the global average, according to the University of Cape Town Associate Professor Tanja Botch. And it, in fact, increased during the COVID-19 lockdowns of the past 2 years, she says. This is perhaps not surprising, given that radio acts as a companion and that people were confined to their homes and so more likely to tune in more often. Meanwhile, Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, has more than 140 state-run and privately owned radio stations. The medium is so popular in the country that the Boko Haram insurgent group set up an FM station near the Cameroon border in 2016, although its operations were quickly halted by the National Broadcasting Commission. As radio services on the continent continue to grow, the demand for more frequencies has risen sharply, according to the International Telecommunications Union. The UN agency says that the medium's popularity could be attributed to its affordability and ease of use. It has launched an initiative to increase the use of frequencies between 87.5 and 108 megahertz, also called Band 2, for FM sound broadcasting in Africa. So this is neat, and this shows that probably one of the big reasons, and they do mention here, is how inexpensive it is to have a radio to listen in. So this is good news, actually.
Countries like Somalia, for example, I don't know what the percentage of people in Somalia that have internet access, never mind unlimited internet access, a simple radio sitting on a table or a desk or what have you, and or carried around with you, portable, is going to give you so much access to so much information, news, entertainment, what have you, at a very low cost, as you said. So this is not new to us. We've been talking about this for years on this program of how important it is, and you just can't forget about radio. And I think this story just reinforces that belief that just if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Exactly.
Next, we have a story about a radio broadcast that only happens once a year. And we believe it's going to happen this year, so we're going to give you the information about it. It may not happen, but we're pretty sure that it will. And it's a special one-day broadcast, a one-hour broadcast, that comes from a station called Radio Umrang. And if you're a regular listener to our show, you probably heard us talk about this in the years past. It's scheduled for Monday, the 21st of February. The annual shortwave broadcast from Radio Amran, or Radio Umrang, from Amrun Island in the German North Frisian Islands. It has a tentative schedule of 1600 to 1659 UTC on 15215 kilohertz via the Issoudun transmitter site in France. And the broadcast is usually heard in German, in the Frisian dialect, and a little bit of English as well. QSL's only via transmitter operator Media Broadcast, QSL-shortwave at media-broadcast.com. The station has been showing up every year on this date in the time and frequency. Glenn Hauser feels that possibly it could even be a recording of previous year's transmissions. So it may not even be a new broadcast, but simply a replay of previous years. You may not know anything about this community, the Frisian, North Frisian Islands. It's kind of like a little breakaway section of the country that would kind of like to be on its own, I think. And they have this unique dialect as well. So we hope it will happen on Monday, February the 21st. So check 15215 at 1600 UTC to see if it is there.
The EIBI Space latest scheduled update also mentions that broadcast for February 21st. So what's happening with our sun? It's pretty much the same thing week after week lately. It's lots of sunspots, lots of little coronal mass ejections, and some small flares. So we move from, you know, G1 class minor geomagnetic storms to quiet conditions. We have moments where, of course, there are some shortwave fade-outs because of these small flares. As we are recording, the solar flux is just below 100 at 97. We have a sunspot number of 103. And we had this week, if it had been Earth-directed, it would have been kind of interesting to watch, because there's a huge, huge solar flare that happened on the far side of the sun. Pretty much everyone thinks it was a X-flare, a very powerful X-flare. The little video of the coronal mass ejection going away from the sun is impressive. If that would have been on the Earth side, we would have been in for probably some major geomagnetic storming. But none of that is going to happen. There is a solar wind that's flowing from a southern coronal hole that could reach Earth on February the 20th, 21st. Overall, tune the radio, tune the higher frequencies. A lot of them are open. And that's the way that you'll actually know what's happening out there, by turning it on.
This is John Figliozzi of Clifton Park, New York. You're listening to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
So Radio Prague International is a broadcaster that's still on shortwave via relays, thanks to WRMI. It is a station I actually listen to quite regularly on their English and French broadcasts. Took the time for World Radio Day to have a new jingle, those little interval signals that we have before broadcasts. And actually, they have a nice little report talking about this. And let's listen in.
Today is World Radio Day, February the 13th. And we have a special announcement to make on that occasion. Every radio station has its own signature jingle, a short melody that reminds you of what you're listening to. Usually it's just a few tones or a snippet of a famous tune. Jingles were first used before the beginning of a broadcast on a specific radio wavelength. They would be played several times with the aim to help listeners tune in their devices to the correct frequency. The jingle would then be played at irregular intervals, usually after a time announcement, and would be followed by an announcement of what station people were listening to. And you can listen to our oldest jingle right now. It's all the way back from the early 1930s. The subsequent communist era brought about major ideological changes, which also reflected themselves into the country's foreign broadcasting service. From the beginning of the 1950s up to 1989, the Radio Prague International jingle was from the song Kupred Uleva, or Forward Left and Not One Step Backward. The Velvet Revolution in 1989 brought about many changes, and one of them was a switchback to Radio Prague International's original jingle based around the New World Symphony of one of Czechia's greatest composers, Antonín Dvořák. But times change fast, and radio is of course constantly evolving. Our station has therefore chosen a new jingle, which is nevertheless still based around Dvořák's famous symphony, as author Martin Hula explains.
Ten úryvek z Dvořákovy Novosvětské je pro znělku Radio Prague International charakteristický prvek.
That snippet from Dvořák's New World Symphony is a characteristic jingle for Radio Prague International. I wanted to create a system which would make it easier to further develop the station's sound, so I slightly changed the tempo and simplified the sound melodically and harmonically. The related sounds, their basic undertones, are based around this change, making for a compact whole. I think that it is precisely these consolidated basic undertones which will make it easier to add further variations and sounds on top of it in the future.
Vytváření případných dalších variací a zvukových prvků.
So, what does this all mean? Well, it means that Czechia in 30 minutes will now be getting a new jingle, which sounds like this.
So it's kind of nice to see that they've actually had the interval signals from before the Cold War, when they were a communist country, and now the updated interval signal, which sounds similar to what they were already using, but probably kind of a more modernized version of it. But cool to see that they are still on the air, that they can still listen to them. North America, the best time from 21 to 22 UTC. 15770 on WRMI is really good. And maybe you'll hear that brand new interval signal from the station.
Yeah, it's nice to hear some of the old ones bring back memories. And if you do a search on the internet, you can find a lot of old interval signals from different radio stations. If you've been a shortwave listener for a very long time, you might like to reminisce about some of them. And if you're new to it, just go and take a listen to what you might have missed. Some pretty interesting ones. These were basically put on the air so that people tuning on analog dials without before the days of frequency readout, whatever, you would tune your radio trying to find where the station was, and you would hear that little repeating song going on, and that would be your way of tuning in and finding the station that you wanted to listen to.
So the ABC wants more funding for Pacific broadcasts. This is radioinfo.com.au via Matt Francis to Glenn Hauser's World of Radio. Australian Broadcasting Corporation Managing Director David Anderson told a Senate committee hearing that public broadcasters in the Pacific have raised concerns about Chinese government pressure to carry state-owned news content. The ABC is lobbying to expand its operations in the Pacific and play a greater soft diplomacy role as China increases its influence in the region. Across the Pacific, there are many infrastructure projects funded by China that give it leverage in many areas, including broadcasting. The national broadcaster ended its Shortwave Radio Australia transmissions in 2017 under Managing Director Michelle Guthrie, amidst warnings that shortwave radio was still important and that other countries would extend their influence in the Pacific in the absence of the ABC Radio Australia signals on shortwave. In 2018, China extended its shortwave broadcast into the region on the vacated ABC frequencies. For the ABC to have an expanded presence, there is important, particularly with concerns, frankly, over Chinese government, Anderson told the Senate committee. The single biggest piece of information that comes back to us from them is concern over the pressure the Chinese government put on them to carry content to broadcast through the Pacific. The ABC also previously broadcast TV news bulletins into 46 nations, including Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, through the DFAT-funded Australia TV network, which was closed in 2014 after federal budget cuts. Chinese President Xi Jinping has expanded the state-owned China Global Television Network in recent years to make the voice of China heard. The ABC continues to broadcast in the Pacific region, but at a smaller scale in previous years. The ABC is currently lobbying the federal government for an additional $12 million to support the expansion of broadcast services to the region again. In his opening statement to the Senate Estimates Committee, David Anderson also outlined the success of the national broadcaster in several areas. The ABC is the leading Australian radio network with the highest reach and share of listening. ABC News finished 2021 as the number one digital news brand in Australia, with more than 63% of Australians connected with ABC News platforms. ABC iView was the number one broadcast video on demand service. Importantly, 78% of Australians trusted the information provided by the ABC, which is significantly higher than all other media institutions and the information providers. In its 90th year, the ABC is more relevant to Australians than ever. And it would be also for the Pacific region. This week, there was actually talk about Tonga that has their undersea cable for communications is actually damaged much more than they thought. So it's going to be difficult and take time before everything is back. So, you know, that also says one thing here. Not just online content you need to expand. You need to have radio content across, once again, shortwave, because that's the way it reaches when something bad is happening. So we have upcoming AmRadio contests.
Yeah, we do. Quite a few things going on this upcoming weekend. First off, the CQ 160-meter single sideband contest, 2200 Zulu February 25th to 2200 Zulu February 27th. Organized by CQ, 160-meter band only, and the mode is single sideband or phone. So that might be really interesting to test out your antennas on 160 meters.
Yep. REF's Coupe, the REF, SSB 06 Zulu, February 26 to 18 Zulu, February 27, organized by Réseau des Émetteurs Français. Objective, French amateurs work as many amateur stations in as many French of the 97 metropolitan departments, including F6REF HQ, overseas territories and DXCC countries of the world. Foreign amateurs work as many French stations in as many of the 97 metropolitan departments, including F6REF HQ, and overseas French territories as possible. 80 through 10 meters and SSB.
The UBA DX contest, the CW, 1300 Zulu February 26th to 1300 Zulu February 27th, organized by the Royal Belgian Amateur Radio Union. It's 80 through 10 meters, and it is CW only.
North American QSO Party, RTTY, 18 Zulu February 26th to 0559 Zulu February 27th, organized by the National Contest Journal. The bands, 160 through 10 meters, the mode RTTY.
And for CW operators, the High Speed Club CW contest, 1400 to 1700 Zulu, February 27th. It's organized by the Radio Telegraphy High Speed Club. The bands are 80 through 10 meters, and it is CW only, and I'm assuming it's very fast CW from the name of that club.
Yep. And last contest is in North Carolina QSO Party, 15 Zulu February 27th to 01 Zulu February 28th, organized by the North Carolina QSO Party Group. Band is 80 through 2 meters, no work bands, SSB, AM, FM, digital, but no FT4 or FT8.
All right. Lots of activity on the ham bands coming up. The 160-meter one sounds really interesting. I might check that one out, I think.
Yep.
that is going to do it for us today and for this week. We thank you for tuning in, and you can check out the show on our YouTube channel at your convenience, or check out the archives on the CKUT website, ckut.ca. We'll talk to you again next Sunday with our next edition of the International Radio Report here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.